The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Yeah, welcome along to the Football Show. So coming up, we'll talk to Stephanie Roach about life in Florence. It's nil all at Anfield between Liverpool and Bayern Munich. Second half has just started. Kenny Cunningham is here in studio. Kenny, we are watching this game. For people just tuning in, how would you sum up that first half? That's fine. That's loads.
We'll move on. Yeah, no, they'll be like reasonably happy from a Liverpool point of view, but a little bit of trepidation as well, because like I said, I haven't been totally secure. Defensively, but certainly the last 50 minutes of the first half, Liverpool just took it up a gear. The intensity levels rose, a bit similar to the first few minutes of the second half. Just seemed to be, in terms of the press, just a little bit more committed to the press. Have a look at Bayern Munich here trying to play out, just getting themselves just another 5 yards higher, putting a little bit more of a squeeze on and trying to win back possession of the football, which they have done already for on one occasion early in the second half. So very tight game, Joe. A lot of tension in the game. Bayern Munich probably played a better football in terms of easier on the eye. Liverpool a little bit more direct, but have still carried a threat playing like that. And you look at Bayern Munich trying to play out here, it really is kind of gamesmanship almost, and saying, Liverpool saying, are you going to play? Are you going to be good enough to play? Have you got the nerve to play on the edge of your penalty box? We're going to squeeze you. But then again, when they have done on occasion, Bayern Munich, they have played through Liverpool, immediately you get a reward because you get the opportunity to break quickly into the Liverpool half of the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, a tactical point of view, it's interesting, and it's very evenly weighed game at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Wouldn't be a surprise if either side scored. Gnabry has certainly shown decent footwork and pace on one side, and Coleman, as Kenny mentioned before the game, is a threat as well, with Lewandowski obviously begging one of them to put something on a plate for him. So even though Liverpool have come into this in the last 25 minutes or so, it'd be no surprise at all if Bayern go on to create something. So nil all, 15 minutes on the clock. We're watching this one all evening. Just a brief tangent for a moment, Kenny, before we hear from Stephanie Roach, who was in the office earlier on today. Chelsea nil, Manchester United 2 at Stamford Bridge last night. Herrera and Pogba with the goals. We've a short clip here of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer speaking after the game, talking about the performance. And I guess, not surprisingly, Paul Pogba again features in his post-match praise. Have a listen.
Well, he had a tough game against PSG, but I thought he was one of probably our best player then. But he had two or three players around him all the time. Tonight, great response. Of course, he's playing against one of the best defensive midfielders in the world with Kante next to him. But I thought today he found a space. We know he's one of the best attacking midfielders in the world. You know, he's got vision. He's got the clear view of. So the pass, the cross for Anders, goal, fantastic. Then again, he plays it out to Marcus. Then the way he makes up ground and gets into the box, fantastic.
How important is Ander Herrera in this team? We talk a lot about Pogba, you've spoken about Mata today. How important is Herrera in terms of his leadership on the pitch and, you know, popping up with the goal that he did today?
His energy and tenaciousness is vital for us, and that's why he plays more or less every single game. He's got loads of energy. He can cover the right-hand side. He runs forward. Tonight, I think you can't just praise one. It's 11 players plus the subs. But Ander, of course, he's done fantastic. You want to see a reaction. And the players, they've been brilliant in training. And we were quite confident before we went into this game that we've found the right team selection and the right, how do you call it, temperament. Because there's a balance between being too eager after you've having lost the game. So today was brilliant.
Yeah, it was certainly a good response. The word, by the way, on Sarri, I know Kenny wants to talk more about Manchester United, but the word on Sarri is that he will be in charge of the Europa League match against Malmo on Thursday, and then he'll certainly be in charge for the Carabao Cup final on Sunday. And after that, all bets are off, it seems. Chelsea fans turned on Sarri in large enough numbers last night. F Sarri Ball was the chant, and then a lot of them joined in with the United supporters who were singing "You're getting sacked" in the morning. So it was that kind of evening for Maurizio Sarri. As for United, Kenny, Solskjaer there mentioned the response to the PSG game. They set up in a diamond, Matic at the base, Mata around Jorginho, and then Herrera and Pogba in between with Lukaku and Rashford up top. Good performance.
Yeah, it was. I was really impressed with it. I was looking at Manchester United more so than Chelsea last night. First, a few little question marks around the Solskjaer off the back of the PSG. Not the result, but kind of the performance. They kind of look a little bit lost second half, very disjointed. So it was really interesting in terms of the response from the players and even the tactical setup from the manager. Because we've spoken about it, hasn't changed a huge amount from a tactical point of view. But on occasions, he has tweaked it. And he did again last night. We've seen United kind of play a... kind of 4-3-3 with split strikers. We spoke about this before, with Lingard playing at almost the top of that diamond and breaking forward quickly in support of the two front players who've played wide. This was more of a traditional shape last night in terms of a Matt, as you suggested, playing the top of a diamond, an orthodox front two. But there was a logic to it in terms of kind of Matic getting around kind of Jorginho. I mean,
Just interrupt you there, because I was curious to get your thoughts on whether or not the shift was to put somebody on Jorginho, which a lot of teams do against Chelsea now, or was it just because he was missing Martial and Lingard and he felt he had to tweak it, I wonder?
Yeah, no, I think that a couple of other teams have done it this season in terms of get on Jorginho's feet, because it's the Sarri way.
Sarri ball, Kenny.
Sarri ball, yeah, is to play through that number six, that holding midfield player. It's not as if Jorginho comes to the ball and he's marked, you see the Chelsea centre-half smash it forward. They're very persistent in terms of how they want to play. This is the manager's philosophy. This is how he wants his teams to play. So teams, not very quickly, but after a period of time, have decided, right, let's smother Jorginho, prevent him getting the ball. I think it's overplayed a little bit. Because if you actually look at Jorginho's stats in terms of how efficient he's been, and forget about the passes completed. I've seen some of his pass completion stats this season, and they're off the radar. But if you're passing the ball sideways, 10 yards sideways for the majority of the time, you're not really influencing the game. You're not hurting opposition teams. So I think by playing somebody in Jorginho's area of the pitch, yeah, you can stop him getting on the ball and maybe influencing the game. He is a very good passer of the ball. But what it also enables you to do is have a number 10 operating behind your front two strikers who can actually get on the ball and influence the game.
Yeah.
Because Jorginho's biggest fault, and we've spoken about before, is the defensive side of his game. He can't defend. And we saw it last night, United's first goal.
Yeah.
They turn over possession of the ball. It's played into Matan, that number 10 position. It's exactly where Jorginho should be, but he's 5 yards wrong side. He hasn't sensed the danger. Not only is the positional sense wrong at times, he's not sensed the danger of getting himself in a goal side position in contact with Mata. He can't recover quickly enough. He hasn't got the legs to recover. So Mata gets the ball, pops it into a left wing position, drifts forward, and doesn't sprint. Jorginho's in his vicinity, but he's not affecting it. It gets played back to Mata, and he's still not in a position to make a tackle. So eventually United creep to the edge of the box, Pogba gets his head up, and we know what happens after that. Again, those defensive failures on the left side of the defence are exposed, Alonso and David Luiz. But it's all coming from there. Stopping at source on that occasion was Jorginho when Chelsea lost possession of the ball. Even before they lose possession, good defenders in the central area will anticipate, this feels dangerous, we could lose possession, where am I, where's Mata? And immediately get themselves into a good defensive position goal side. So Mata gets that ball, if he does get it, he's under pressure and he's forced back down the pitch, rather than what he did was receive the ball torn and play a forward pass into the Chelsea half of the pitch.
If you've a good number 10 against Chelsea, it's win-win, isn't it? So aside from that, and that is a big issue for Sarri, and I don't know, he's going to have to rethink it, I think. What about the rest of the United performance?
I was good. I tell you, I liked them defensively.
Lindelof and Smalling?
Yeah, I've always thought, this is the pairing I've always looked and thought in terms of balance. I know individual performance had me good, and Lindelof struggled for a period of time when he came to the club.
It's been better lately.
Yeah, it has been better. It has been better. But this is the partnership for me. I've always been a fan of Smalling for me. For me, it's always been Smalling if fit and A in order to play alongside him. And the more I've seen of Lindelof, I've thought, yeah, potentially these two for me are the best partnership. So I thought they were really solid last night and aggressive as well with it as well when they had to be. Smalling in particular, getting tied to Higuain. Probably understandable because he knows Higuain can't hurt you with pace in behind. And that always encourages you as a defender to get tight. But I thought Lindelof defended well, crosses into the box, defended the near post well. Fullbacks as well, decent, good defensive shape. Solid down the central area of the pitch. I think Matic has been helped by Herrera, who's kind of really stepped up taking his game, not to a different level in terms of he's doing stuff now he never did before, but really tenacious in there, kind of making tackles. That's kind of helping Matic for me as well. He's probably looking at maybe in terms of, you know, years at catching up with him a little bit. But in terms of defensive shape, was really, really good. Tenacious, high energy, and carrying a real threat on counter-attack. It was really good.
Yeah. He's turned vegan recently, Chris Smalling. A little bit of trivia for you.
Is it?
He has gone vegan.
Is that right?
He has, yeah.
I must admit, occasionally during my career, you're getting that mindset.
What did you do?
You're looking for those little small percentages, the margins, blah, blah, blah. And a couple of times I did have a look at it and think, right.
Just batch loaf, nothing else.
But exactly, that was my point, because I thought, really, I don't eat a lot of red meat, but cut out the chicken and fish. I love fish, right? But then there's no way to...
Cut out fish, that can't be good for you.
Batch loaf was going to go and anything like that. So, it's got to be all or nothing. It's got to be all or nothing.
Well, apparently Smalling said he had some digestive issues, and his girlfriend is big into veganism, so she's got him onto it, so...
Oh, Mrs. got involved. He's a new girlfriend on the scene.
Don't know.
That's weak.
But he has them at Carrington doing it.
That's weak. You're getting pedicures and all that. That's all.
Thought you were more modern.
Different hairstyle last night.
I thought you were more modern than that. That's the old school footballer coming at you. No, he was saying it's nice. He's enjoying it. The other players are looking over at Carrington saying, what's this? Can I have a taste?
I enjoyed his performance last night. I really did. Right. And like I said, it was a great response from it. It was a real collective performance last night. Tactically, how he set the team up again, so also give him credit for that.
Right.
And the mentality of the players, how they implemented it, really encouraging.
Okay. We'll have to see how things go for Sarri. A 6-0 defeat to City last time they played them. A repeat of that, obviously, in the Carabao Cup seems to be... there's talk of even if he loses, he's going to go. The unknowable here is that it's Abramovich who'll make the decision. He hasn't even been at a game all season. Nobody quite knows what he's thinking. But Sarri is on the precipice, it seems. Still nil all at Anfield. 59 minutes on the clock. We're taking a short break. Stephanie Roach popped into studio earlier on. She's playing her football now in Florence. She was in great form. So we'll play that interview next.
Type of midfielder is Herrera. He's not a box to box. He's not defensive. He can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch? What for what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what is he? What was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
Welcome back. Still nil all at Anfield. 63 minutes now. We were just chatting there during the break. Nil all, not a dreadful result for Liverpool to take to Munich. Away goals and all that.
Oh, certainly not. Not with Van Dijk back into the team, and obviously the threat Liverpool possess on the counter attack. In fact, normal circumstances, Bourne, you think, yeah, decent result, but with that kind of pairing defensively, for me, they almost got to go searching a little bit Munich for that away goal. Even that 1-1 draw, that 2-2 draw I spoke about before the game, far better situation that for Bayern Munich than nil all. You would really sense Liverpool players coming off the pitch and nil all would think, yeah, just slight advantage here, just opportunity missed a little bit for Bayern Munich.
Kenny, you don't do the Euro Millions, do you?
Or the lottery?
Mm.
No.
An Irish ticket holder in the Euro Millions this evening has just won €175,475,380.
What's the exchange rate at the moment?
£175 million.
Alone?
Sole winner.
Bets Dermot Desmond or something like that. It's just
that'd be typical. I think it's 75 million.
It's too much.
Oh.
Can honestly say far better that split. Maybe 10, 15 winners. Far.
Well, it might be a syndicate, but
I hope so.
It's just one winner.
A syndicate, I'd be
175 million. Oh, honestly, you couldn't let you. I mean, if that was you, you would just have to turn up for work tomorrow and just not let people in your world know. Because your life would just be a mess.
Wouldn't change a thing.
I know that.
I'd still have my buzz pass, my backpack. I don't worry about that.
Call it a leap card, will you? Okay, well, listen. What you get, by the way, in pounds, Kenny, is £151,000,000, 917,000. Will you give me the 917,000? Right, we have to move on. Nil all at Anfield, 65 minutes on the clock. We've been trying to get Stephanie Roche on the show for ages the last while. She's obviously been very busy. She was in earlier on this afternoon promoting Lifestyle Sports. She's a brand ambassador there. So we got to speak with Stephanie Roche this afternoon. Here's how we got on. Now, we're very happy to welcome Stephanie Roche into studio as opposed to hanging out in Florence on a Skype line. You're very welcome. How are you
Thank
doing?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for popping in. I know you're out today with Lifestyle Sports. You're a brand ambassador, the number one destination for football. And if people want to join the conversation, they can follow at Lifestyle Sports Football on Instagram. So you've been out doing the rounds today.
Yeah, obviously very excited to go on board with Lifestyle Sports and sharing my story as well. So there's going to be a lot of stuff coming up in the next few months if people keep an eye out for it.
Great. So Florencia, you're a Florencia player now. Not affiliated with Fiorentina, which was my first thought when you signed.
A lot of people have been getting confused with that, to be fair. Like, a few people have said Fiorentina, but no, it's Florencia, yes. So there's two teams now in Florence, which is great, obviously, for the city to have two women's teams in Serie A. So.
Yeah, it's their first season in the top flight. They've been around about 4 years. I was looking, so 17 games in, Juventus are top, you're sixth.
Yeah.
Not a bad return on a first season in the top flight.
Yeah, we've done really well as well. I think we surprised a lot of the teams. I mean, we've really held our own against some of the bigger teams, and we've been quite unlucky, to be fair. We had a couple of sendings off in some of the big games and kind of maybe just lost our cool a little bit with some of the younger players, maybe not knowing, you know, what to do in the bigger games. Yeah. But it's been exciting for me, and obviously being with a new team, it's a new challenge, so I'm really happy.
And what's the makeup of the team? Is it mostly Italian players, a few English speakers in there?
Yeah,
are you Billy No Mates in the dressing
room? No, not quite. I've got another English speaker, a few other English speakers there. Actually, there's another Roach there as well, a girl from England. So I've got her, an American, a Swedish girl and a German girl who both speak English. And then there's a couple of the Italian girls who've played in England and America who both speak fluent, so they kind of translate for us and help us speak to the coach, because the coach doesn't have any English. So that's the kind of hardest part of it altogether. But yeah, it's been a bit different, obviously, getting used to the different climate and the different culture, should I say. And it's just been exciting, as I said.
How's the Italian?
It's okay. I only had my first lesson on Friday, but my teacher said that I was good. I don't know whether she's just being nice now, but but yeah, I'm kind of getting better at just kind of trying to know the words and training and stuff more than anything. I'm focusing on kind of knowing what the coach is saying rather than anything else. So I have my Duolingo app on my phone as well, which I go to look to. And my boyfriend was slagging me last night because there was a text message in the WhatsApp group, and I had to go in and copy and paste into Google Translate to see what's being said. But it's easy enough to kind of do it once I have that. But
I guess once you get the football speak, I think David Beckham said the first two words he learned in Spanish were Salgado saying cover me. Bomb dom.
Yeah, well, that's it. You get the girl shouting stuff at you enough, you know what it's going to mean after a while. You know, like on the way, if they're telling you one thing over and over again, you kind of start to realise what the coach is saying and the girls are saying.
And so Florence, what a beautiful part of the world to be in.
Yeah, it's obviously very nice. And where I am, I'm quite lucky. I'm in Porta Romana, which is just outside the city. So it's quite close to get in and out as well. So it's nice. I'm able to kind of go and do a few touristy stuff. Now, we are quite busy. We train every day pretty much. We've the day after the game off. But other than that, we're pretty full on. And I'm in the gym as well, doing my programs too. So it is pretty hectic away for at football. So getting the time away can be difficult. But when my family and that come over, it's nice to be able to kind of show them the nice things that are around you.
Yeah, no doubt. And is the Serie A League, the Women's Serie A League, is it well funded? Is it just getting off the ground? How does it compare to what you experience, say, in Sunderland, for example?
Yeah, I think it's obviously an up-and-coming league. The last maybe 2 or 3 years, I think it's got better and better, because I had a few girls at Sunderland who played there 2-3 years ago, and they kind of said that it was slow building, but the last year or two has been really good, and I've noticed that myself. I think the biggest difference, I would say, is that it's probably more of a level playing field. I think when I played in England, when we played against the likes of Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, they were the top teams, and you kind of went into them games, I suppose, looking to try and get the best result possible. Whereas in Italy, I've noticed that when we got to play against Juventus or Fiorentina, there's no kind of sitting back and hoping we don't get hammered. Everybody's going for it and kind of having a go at each other, you know, that kind of way. Yeah. So that's probably the biggest difference for me, I think, in terms of the league and stuff. But it's definitely an up-and-coming league. And I think with the likes of Juventus, AC Milan and Roma and stuff having teams in it, it's only going to get better because more teams are going to be interested in funding their women's teams.
It's obviously a football-mad country as well. Has it been well received? Are you getting decent crowds? Is that a bit of a slow burner?
No, yeah, they have, to be fair. Considering the team are only going, but I think it's 5 years in total, they've come up the leagues really well. We have a very, very generous owner who's really putting a lot into it and making sure all the girls are looked after. And I think that shows in their performances, because a lot of the girls know what it means to him to kind of to make sure that Florentia is a well-respected team. And I think the girls have given back by trying to perform in the best way possible. But I think the city is taken to us. Obviously, Fiorentina is are the main team for the men's side, so that's probably the one they all know. But we've got a good crowd and we're getting some good numbers to the games, which is nice to see.
Okay, and is homesickness a factor? I mean, you're pretty used to not being home, I suppose.
Yeah, it's funny. I've probably only been home about maybe 3 times in the last 6 or 7 months, so it's been obviously difficult. My boyfriend's here as well. Dean's playing for Longford this season, so he's preparing for the first game on Friday, so it's difficult being away from him, obviously, and trying to do the long distance. But apart from that, I think my family are used to not having me here all the time. I've got little nieces and nephews who, when they FaceTime me, they're like, where are you now, type of thing. So they're well used to me not being here.
And you talked about being in the gym and working on your programme. So I think it's November 2017 against Northern Ireland?
September.
An innocuous enough incident. You went up for a header, I was reading, and did a real number on yourself.
It was just the way I landed. I kind of jumped up for a header, and as I was coming down, the girl kind of leaned into me, as you do, just naturally. Yeah. And I kind of just, whatever way I landed, my whole knee kind of jarred and went back. It was just a nasty one. And when I done it, I kind of knew myself that it was something bad. And you know yourself, obviously, if you hurt yourself, you know the pain level and stuff like that. And it was more, I just panicked, thinking that's going to be long-term type of thing. And obviously, I had a couple of scans and stuff on it, and it seemed to be that it was actually all intact and it wasn't too bad. It was just a break in terms of my tibia, which obviously doesn't sound nice.
Just a break.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of my knee was all intact, my ACL and stuff like that, and that was probably the main concern from the doctors. But unfortunately, there was a few other complications in terms of the tibia was broken. Then I had my medial condyle and stuff just above my knee, and there was a lot of bone bruising and stuff, which took a long time to heal as well. And I just had a lot of issues when I tried to strike through the ball when I came back in January with Sunderland, and that's kind of where I knew there something wasn't right with it. So we had to go back to the kind of drawing board and see what it was.
Saw that, yeah. So you get back, maybe 6 to 8 weeks was the initial prognosis, and then you get back, kick a ball, it's painful, and it turns out there's a stress fracture there, and then on and on it goes. So you've been out the guts of, was it 14 months?
Yeah, well, when I had my first, obviously, appearance for Florentia a couple of weeks ago, and that's probably, would have been about 15 months in total, that I was out for, so it was a long time.
That's no fun.
No, not at all, especially when you're so used to being around it. And obviously, Tipwood, I was very fortunate. I haven't had a lot of injuries, so being out for that long, having not been out before, was difficult trying to get my head around it, but thankfully, I'm through the other side now.
Yeah, no, it's great. Is that what contributes to you leaving Sunderland the following May,
June? Well,
I mean, are they saying,
it was more so, to be fair, Sunderland were very good to me, and I had a good relationship with the manager and the chairwoman, and the chairwoman did offer me a contract, but Sunderland, unfortunately, didn't get their licence for the league. So they went down the leagues, and they're actually playing in the Premier League now, which is kind of 3 leagues below, pretty much. So
you didn't want to make
for
that
me
drop.
Personally, I didn't think it was the right move for me. Obviously, I want to be playing international football, and if I want to go to Colin and say, pick me, I can't say I'm not playing at the right level, you know, that kind of way. So the big decision was for me to try and get into a good league and a professional league where I'm training every day and able to kind of get into the Ireland squad and be fit and ready to go, you know.
And what were your options? I mean, were Florentia the only one calling, or did you have some other offers?
No, I was quite lucky, to be fair, considering I was out for obviously quite a long time. It was difficult, and I think I was panicking more than that and thinking, where am I going to go, type of thing. And I had a couple of offers from WSL2 in England, and there was talk with one of the teams in WSL1, but they needed the player straight away ready to go, and I just was only starting to get myself fit in September. So I spoke to them, and obviously they knew where I was at, and that was kind of a non-runner in the end. So it was between Spain and Italy where I had the offers, and actually France again kind of was an option as well. But I decided in the end to go to Florence, and I spent probably the guts of my time there kind of sussing out the place and making sure that it was the right move for me, and thankfully it's all worked out.
Yeah, because you have moved around a bit, so people have followed your career. 2014 you were in France, didn't seem to enjoy it or settle there?
Yeah, I've spoke about France quite a lot, I think, and there's a few things that I suppose I jumped in, I signed the contract, it was my first professional contract, and I kind of just seeing professional was like, oh yeah, going to be training every day, let's go for this. But unfortunately, there was a lot of stuff that I was promised would happen that didn't happen in terms of even just my lessons and getting French lessons. And I think from my experience now, from being in Italy to being in France, I think in France they're a little bit more reluctant to speak to you in English, you know, that kind of way, whereas in Italy they tried to help you a little bit more, whereas in France it was just like, we're not speaking English to you, and I didn't have my lessons at all. Like,
what did they think was going to happen?
I know, yeah, but it's just the culture, I suppose, of, well, it was where I was anyway, and I don't want to tarnish every French person with that, but I felt like it was kind of like, if you don't speak English, just I'm not going to try with you. But that wasn't the only thing. There was a couple of issues. I had a girl there who played in Piemont actually with me when I was in Ireland, and she had a falling out with the manager after about a month and a half and ended up leaving the team. And she was kind of my go-between in terms of talking to the manager and stuff. So that kind of messed up a lot of that stuff for me as well. And where I was, it was in a little bit of a kind of place in the middle of nowhere. And I suppose you don't think of that when you're signing a football contract. So that's something that I've learned from. And as I said, now I'm in a lovely city and I've got a good contract where I am now, and I'm quite happy with it. So it was...
Yeah. With Houston... their manager even spoke about it almost in terms of regret that they had two international spots and they needed to fill them, and it was a World Cup year, I think, as well, which complicated things. Is that a big disappointment that didn't work out? Did you like it over there? It was basically one season, effectively.
Yeah, that was, it's probably, I suppose, one of the most disappointing things that's happened in my career. I think she spoke with the manager. The manager was a really, really nice guy. And he spoke to me the week beforehand, and he told me that he knows that I was coming from a different type of league and he believes that I will succeed. Yeah. And unfortunately, we had, I think, two ACL injuries in the back line, and we had another girl who hurt her knee as well. It was going to be out for pretty much the whole season because it's only a short season in America. So he had to, as you say, fill the international spots, and I had to go in order to make space for a defender to come in. And that's just how it was over there. And it was disappointing because I do believe that if I was given a chance, I would have done well. And I just kind of... it was over before it begun type of thing. So it was obviously disappointing for me as a player to have to do that.
People know how good the US international team is. Is that the best league in the world in women's football?
Yeah, I think England's very, very close. Right. In my personal opinion, I think England is more technical and America is kind of more about athleticism and kind of, do you know that kind of way? Yeah. I think if you went to watch a Man City versus Chelsea, let's say, they pass the ball really well. They play really good football. And I think in America, it's all about who's the fittest and who's the strongest and who can keep going the longest type of thing. And I know that's obviously a factor in both, in every game, you know, like on the way. But for me personally, I think that was the difference. It was more technical and tactical in England than it was in America. But both leagues are very, very strong.
Right. And anyone who's seen you in action, not least the goal, knows the technical ability isn't an issue. So your issue there was to adapt to the physicality, I presume.
Yeah,
that takes a year or two.
Exactly. Even just like the pre-season, and obviously in the Houston Heat, it was... honest to God, like you could barely breathe just normally, let alone doing your full pre-season. And their pre-season was crazy compared to anything that I've done. And I remember there was a girl there from England, and she had come through the college system in America, and she said to me that it took her nearly a year and a half just to get used to the college schedule, you know, that kind of way. So it was just a different type of fitness and different type of, I suppose, training kind of regime that I wasn't used to. And it kind of took me a while to get used to. But again, I think in any of the small side of games and the football side of things, I definitely showed that I had the ability to be there, and that's why I think the manager liked me. But unfortunately, as I said, it was a short league and they needed to make the change quickly. And it
welcome
was
to professional sport.
I'd say
after France and Houston, you're thinking,
there was times where I was like, what am I doing? This is stop. But no. Thankfully, as I said, I kept going and I had a great opportunity with Sunderland.
Has the there for 3 years? Has the Puskas Award been nothing but positive in your life and open loads of doors and is probably the reason you're doing things with lifestyle and that you're a household name? Has it been all good, or has any aspect of, I don't know, being thrust into the limelight, a certain kind of fame, and maybe the expectation that Stephanie Roche is going to score goals like that routinely, have there been downsides to it, or has it all been good in your life?
I think mainly positive, but obviously I think there's always going to be a couple of downsides to it, like maybe what you're saying about maybe going to teams and they're expecting you to be doing overhead kicks and training and stuff like that. Like, that doesn't happen, it doesn't come naturally. But I think everywhere I've gone, I think I've shown what I'm about as a player. I think anybody who knows me as a player knows that I'm quite technically good on the ball and I want to try and play football. Mm. And I've done that everywhere I've gone in terms of showing what I'm about. But yeah, I think people, they'll be expecting kind of shots from the halfway line or something like that. Yeah. But I'm actually quite a simple player in terms of playing football. But yeah, but for me personally, I think it's all been quite positive. I think Puskas obviously made me kind of, as you say, a well-known name and kind of people know, as soon as you say my name, they know who I am, or the girl that scored that goal type of thing. Like, so it's definitely been very, very positive in most aspects.
Yeah. So with regard to Ireland then, the draw for Euro 2021, which is on in England, I mean, it'd be great to get there. Yeah. Final at Wembley and all the great grounds that you've probably grown up watching on TV, where the games will be at. That's on this Thursday. Ireland are ranked 33rd in the world overall. That's about where we are. Colin Bell's obviously in there now. Have you had much interaction over the last year and a half with the team? Are you hanging around?
Yeah, I have, to be fair. I have to say Colin's been very good to me. I think he had me in around the hotel quite a few times when the girls were in the home base sessions or the home base games, should I say. And I've been texting him quite a lot now just to kind of let him know where I'm at. And in fairness, he wants me to be playing, and that's quite understandable. I think Colin has a very professional attitude, and that's what we want around the squad. So for me, I think it's the right thing for me to be able to say, look, I'm playing more minutes at Laurentia now. I'm ready to come in and play in the Irish team. So at the minute, I'm texting him every week. I'm probably annoying him at this stage, letting him know where I'm at fitness-wise and how many minutes I'm playing per game and stuff. And I just can't wait to kind of get back in and be around the girls, because it's something that I have missed for the last few months.
Well, you've been there for a decade now, not to make you feel old.
Oh, yeah.
Senior debut in 09.
Yeah.
So that, I'd say that's flown by in ways you can't believe.
Yeah, definitely.
Of Florentia's 17 games, have you played many? Are you up to speed?
Well, I only was able to start playing just before Christmas. So I had my first appearance just after Christmas. A cup just coming on for a few minutes. But I spoke to the manager last week just before I came home, and had a very, very positive conversation with him. So I'm expecting to get a few starts now in the next few weeks and hopefully kick on from there.
I did see your one. It was a lovely touch, and you beat the keeper, and then there's such a amount of mud on the goal line that the ball stopped, which was kind of comical. Oh, there we have it there, if people are watching. It's in, it's not in.
A few people were slagging me saying it was going wide. Actually, Andy Reid was slagging me, telling me to lift it as well on Twitter, but that happens, doesn't it?
Good you're back playing.
Yeah.
So if it's a 10-year anniversary of you making your debut with the senior side, it is in April, 2 years since, and I just look back at it there before you came in, and like the ashen faces at the press conference where you're there. It's kind of humiliating, really, where you're having to talk about getting change in the bathroom and things like match fees, which you don't want to be talking about when it's representing your country.
Exactly.
But clearly, you guys felt that you were being not treated very well for a long time, and you made a stand. I was reading Olivia O'Toole in the Irish Examiner back at the time, or maybe about 6-7 months afterwards, and her sense of the whole situation was there were plenty of times, this is before you went public, there were plenty of times when I and other girls did speak up, and we were basically told to sit down and shut up. There's nothing we can do about it. There's no money. That was her sense of the attitude. So it built up to that moment. Have things changed for real behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think so. Even just touching on Olivia, I think Olivia is probably one of the best players to ever play for Ireland, and there's not a lot of people out there who would know a lot about her, only girls who are probably involved in the game. So I think from her point of view, I think it was that she wanted it a long time ago and didn't get it. But I do think that for us personally, it was just a kind of, it needed to be said more than anything. I know obviously she said that it had been said and it hadn't, but for us personally as a group of players, I remember speaking and saying, look, we need to go and say it, because we're at a stage now where we've got such a good squad of players, we've got a great coach coming in who's going to try and want us playing the right way. We need to have everything else kind of coming together. And that's when girls aren't in camp was probably the biggest issue, because some girls don't have gym memberships, they're working full time and they're not able to, you know, that kind of way. It was little things like that we thought that whenever we came into camp, we weren't quite ready. And I've been around, as you say, 10 years, making me feel old, where we've just almost got there. And it's kind of like, well done.
Yeah.
It was easy. You didn't get it. Don't worry about it.
Almost an attitude of, well, isn't it great we have a women's team?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where we wanted to stop that. And I think players like Emma Byrne, who's been around for a long time, obviously sees the potential in the team that is there. And we have to thank people like that who want to kind of step up and kind of, I suppose, make it better for the younger generation that are coming through. But I think for us,
sorry to interrupt, Stephanie. Had much been said behind the scenes building up to this moment where you had to go public? Like, were you banging your heads against the wall, or did you just say, let's just go public straight away?
No, there was a lot that went on before that. We didn't want to do that at all. I think you can see by the faces on all of us. Yeah, we always slag now looking back. We all look like we're depressed off our heads, like,
honestly,
just sitting there. It's a really bad picture.
It's like you all have food poisoning or something.
It's really, really bad. But no, we had the PFAI representing us, and they were trying to help us in getting the stuff across into what we need. And I think that was one of the biggest kind of, they didn't want them representing us and stuff like that, and we kind of had to come together. And it wasn't like us against them type of thing, because I think the FAI want what we want, you know, that kind of way. They want us to be able to improve. They want us to be able to go to major tournaments. And we just felt the few little things that we put on the list is what we needed in order to get there. And I think in doing that, we've put pressure on ourselves. And I think the girls know that. And I think we've seen in the qualifiers for the World Cup how well the girls done. I think obviously we fell short near the end, but they put in some great performances against the likes of Holland, who have just won the Euros a few years ago, you know. So I think we've definitely put pressure on ourselves. But as I said, I think we didn't want it to be an us against them mentality. It's we want to come together and make sure that we're all pushing towards the same goal, and that's to get to a major tournament final.
Yeah, well, there's lots of great people in the FAI who want to see you.
Exactly,
well,
and that's it. Like, it was just kind of a case of it being said and them kind of going, oh, you just want that, all right, and we'll sort it. And that's kind of where it went from. So
okay, good.
Thankfully, we've got it all across the line.
So draw this Thursday, and then it's 16 teams at Euro 2021. Obviously, England are already in. How do you rate Irish chances of getting to the Euros? I mean, it'd be an amazing thing for you to get to a tournament like that.
Yeah, well, that's obviously, I think, every player's dream is to get to a European or
a championship.
Exactly. And I think if we were honest with ourselves, the World Cup is always very, very difficult to qualify for. And I'd say, Colin, looking at the group we had, and then obviously I'd say he's looking ahead at the Euros thinking that's the one we want to go for, and he wants to build it. And I'm not saying we obviously wanted to qualify for the World Cup, but I'm just saying in general, I think the World Cup is always a little bit more difficult for the women's team to qualify for. So I think if we're really being realistic, we would have been looking long term and building a platform to go for the Euros and hopefully get to that. So I believe we've got a great chance. I think we've got a good bunch of players, and I think the younger players that are coming through have matured quite a bit over the last campaign. I think that will definitely show in the Euros. So hopefully we get a good group, and I think any team we get will want to play well against. So hopefully we can represent the country well and hopefully get there, because I know that's a big dream for a lot of the players in that squad.
Yeah, it's the least lots you deserve as well. It'd be amazing. Listen, great to have you in. Thanks so much for popping in. I know it's kind of a quick visit. Best of luck back for the rest of the season over in Florence. We might check in with you at some stage on Skype some evening and see how it's going. And see you back in the green jersey as well soon.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Okay. Thank you.
You know, I'm a football man. Kevin's a football man, you know. And
Joel's not.
Now,
sorry, I'm a football man too.
What do you wear? Are you a boxer shorts
boxers,
man?
Yeah, boxers, yeah.
Are you a knickers man, or what are you? That's one thing my wife's never had to buy me, is boxer shorts or pants, because I don't wear any. Simple as that. I don't think I'm the only male out there that doesn't wear pants either. I think there's a lot of males. I know a lot of people that don't wear pants. It's no big deal. I don't know. You know, I'm a football man. I don't wear it. Oh, Robson Canoe. We found one here. Still don't wear pants. Still don't wear pants. What do you wear? Boxers.
Now then, welcome back. So it's just gone full time at Anfield. Handshakes between Jurgen Klopp and Niko Kovac, who has been under pressure this season in his first season as Bayern manager, and players are high-fiving as well. So we're finally balanced. Just in the break there, our guy Hummels, another bit of nice defending.
Oh, it was brilliant defending,
oh,
Joe.
Kenny.
Oh, my God.
The old
God.
Man with no pace loved it. The old man in the room with no pace loved it.
I could see myself in that position. Ball play down the side in behind him. Norris caused a problem by coming out. Now, he's got to the ball first on the edge of his 18-yard box. I know exactly what I would have done in that situation. I would have had a touch and I would have booted it as high into the stand as I possibly could have.
No chances, Cunningham.
Yeah, absolutely. What he did, he had a touch. And even though the Origi was close to him, he had another touch, chopped it around the corner, stepped back in front of Origi into a central position, and even then didn't look to lump it up the pitch. Got his head up and popped a really sharp pass into one of his teammates in central midfield. Brilliant, assured, calm defending. And it summed up his performance. Really enjoyed watching him play this evening.
If Bayern had been better up front tonight, they could have won that game. I think they gave it away cheaply at times. There were a few moments, like in the first half, there was a ball which should have been squared to Lewandowski. We were surprised it wasn't seen. Like, there were openings there for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think the fact he made this, I mean, Goretzka's been playing a lot of games in central midfield this season. Left him out this evening. More of a creative force, brought Martinez in. More of a defensive mindset. So you could easily argue, I'll get Goretzka in there, a bit more of a creative in, so it looks forward a bit earlier.
Yeah.
Would have helped Lewandowski. But then what do you sacrifice to gain that?
Yeah.
You sacrifice a little bit of defensive solidity. So I've no problem in terms of how Kovac set up the team. And some comments there we heard on the TV suggesting this is as good as a win for Bayern Munich. And I can kind of understand that to a point. But again, for me, I've this Liverpool team, in terms of how they're set up to play, I don't think there's a huge amount Kovac can do to that starting 11. I don't see one or two or three players who can come in, like Ribéry coming in for Coman, for me, doesn't greatly increase the quality of the team. Possibly Goretzka coming into that central midfield area may give them more of a creative element, but that's dangerous with Liverpool on the counter-attack. But for me, Liverpool, in terms of Van Dijk in particular coming back into that team. I'd even argue maybe Lovren, if we can get a game some minutes under his belt between now and then. The partnership of Lovren and Van Dijk, and Van Dijk in particular, really enhances that Liverpool, makes them better and clearly stronger.
Just
for the second leg.
Yeah, no doubt. Just as an aside, Bayern had the option of buying James Rodriguez for 42 million if they want at the end of the year. What's happened to this guy that we saw light up the World Cup?
Yeah, no, well, that's never gonna happen. Yeah, you're right. That's a difficult one. That's a difficult one. Question marks about his personality, attitude, professionalism.
But he's nowhere near.
At times, he's nowhere near. I've seen him play well in the Bayern Munich short. I'll say that. I've seen games in the Bundesliga over the past 18 months where he has played well and made a contribution. But on a consistent week to week level, I haven't seen it. And managers haven't trusted him. Mm. Different managers at the club either. So yeah, that's not going to happen. He's going to find himself back at Real Madrid. Somebody will take him on reduced wage, and he might become a bit of a nomad over the next couple of years. It is a little bit of a shame, like you said, because he exploded onto the scene in 2014, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The World Cup got that big move to Real Madrid, but...
Maybe that's not the best place to go
mentally, sometimes. Yeah, psychologically, you never know. Getting so much so soon, Joe, the financial, you've made that big move.
Someone's got 175 million tonight. It's too much. It's too much for a young man.
Can we find out who they are? Can we find out?
There's lots of people pretending on Twitter right now.
It's them. It's got to be a syndicate. At least tell me it's a syndicate.
No, it's one person.
Shared out.
Singleton. No, I don't
syndicate,
know.
Syndicate, not Singleton.
We're pretty much done. A reminder, by the way, this Thursday, we're continuing our build-up to Cheltenham. The latest Bulmers Road to Gold event in the 22 nightclub in Dublin. Jarlath Regan, Brian Cooper, Kate Harrington, Vogue Williams, Ollie Bell. Live music as well from Smash Hits. An exclusive off-air event. We've been giving away tickets this evening. We asked you, which county is Brian Cooper from? The answer is Kerry. And so congratulations to Ronan Smith in County Wicklow. Ronan, you've won a pair of tickets to that show on Thursday night.
Sad day, you don't know the location of a nightclub in Dublin. Must be getting old, Joe. That's 22. Where is that?
I'm equally old. Dublin City Centre.
No, I remember.
OTBAM tomorrow morning is back at 7:45. And I'm seeing that they've got plenty of reaction to this game on the show tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, we've got Wednesday Night Rugby. We'll have James Horncastle. And I'm seeing Kenny Cunningham in studio again.
I'm gonna slide in. What games? I've had a blank. What games have beaten?
Man City giving Schalke a whopping.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They've gone to pieces, Schalke.
Yeah, you would expect it. Yeah.
We've got to go. Kenny, thank you for this evening. Tom Dunn's on the way.
Give you a move for the perfect pass. Give